Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. October 23rd now, as we quickly move through this month of October and we keep talking about that. It's just amazing that we're going so fast. And maybe it's all the news that's breaking each and every day. So much to talk about. And today we've got a great show lined up for you. So in the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to have our first first debate of Council District A candidates. Holly Friedman and Amy McCarron will join Dave Cohen and myself in studio for our first of our debates. We have one scheduled for Monday as well. The clerk's candidate, Mr. Lombard, is going to come in. His opponent is refusing to debate him. So Mr. Lombard is going to be the beneficiary of 1 hour Q&A. And so we look forward to that. And then we have, in the following hour, the District E between Cindy Nguyen and Jason Hughes will be joining us in studio on Monday. So we're looking forward to that. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll talk about a very serious issue, one in this month, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Dr. Alfred John Colfrey joins us. He's a breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health. And Dr. Ellen Zachris, radiation oncology at LCMC Health. We will be talking about the latest numbers. We'll be talking about the latest approaches in dealing with breast cancer and reconstructive surgery. We'll go to the talk lines as well. We'd love to hear questions from folks that have some uncertainties about what they may be facing or otherwise. And we hope to bring forward some really incredible information about genetic testing, surgical advances, nipple-sparing mastectomies, as well as a number of other issues relative to breast cancer. At 10:30, we have the Port of New Orleans show with Walt Leger, Jr. He is the former board member there, served for a number of years. His term has expired, and we'll kind of dig deep as to what his thoughts, what his experience of being on the board, how he kind of views certain things that are going on at the present time. It's a nice opportunity to have a former board member speak with us about their experiences being on the board of the Port NOLA Board of Commissioners, as well as the railroad board that they own too. So we'll visit with Walt Leger, Jr. Okay. I watched that budget hearing last evening that took place yesterday at 3 o'clock last evening. I got an opportunity to sit down and watch it. And I'm going to try and put this whole conversation in some context as to the difficulty of everything that is going on, and the fact that we still don't know right now how many more payrolls we're able to cover. Joe Threat said yesterday that the bimonthly payroll is about $20 million. So there's five payrolls left, five pay periods left in this year. And they're not sure. They believe they can cover the next one. There's uncertainty after that as to what they're going to be able to cover. We have find ourselves in a really ticklish predicament. There are a lot of people working behind the scenes trying to make things happen, trying to move this ball along that would be contrary to what would normally happen and be required in order to procure or secure financing of a revenue anticipation bond, going through the bond commission, trying to get this thing done so that we can continue, the city can continue to pay their employees, pay their bills. Got vendors out there not being paid. They have moved off of Net 30. They processed their last batch, according to some of the testimony the other day. None of this is good. None of it. But what's interesting is some of the media is now bringing the receipts, right, about what this council was told not too long ago. And WDSU posted a video of a hearing where Gilbert Montano and Romy Samuel, Gilbert being the chief administrative officer and the chief financial officer, Romy Samuel, appeared before the city council. And it's amazing what they were told in April. April. And I quote from this article, Gilbert Montano. If we spent every dollar this entire year and everything comes to fruition, we will end the year with a $100 million fund balance. There would be no deficit, right? And we would have a $100 million fund balance on December 31st, which on January 1st means they have a $100 million surplus. On the last day, it's fund balance. On the first day, it's surplus. Montano doubled down during that April meeting. He says as follows, and I quote, "This financial snapshot, I hope, presents the opportunity for the city to make appropriate adjustments, but should assure the public that our financial position is stable through continued fiscal stewardship and financial planning, the city assures structural balance through 2025 and heading into 2026. Now, the article appropriately points out that this is in the aftermath, and I would assume you've been able to see the data of what went on after the New Year's Day terror attack, the snow event, and the Super Bowl, right? And also from Taylor Swift, which was in quarter four of 2024. Now, how in April can we make these representations to the council and at the same time testify today through the series of budget committees, because Romy Samuel's still around, Gilbert Montano's now moved on to the executive team at the Audubon Society, Audubon Zoo. How can one stand before the council today and say, we've been warning you? We've been attempting to tell you, we've been trying to make you aware of the precarious position that we find ourselves in and that the budget is being strained. I just kind of believe somebody on the council's got to get a little bit more aggressive and box these people into a corner to answer these questions. I know it's uncomfortable. These are nice folks. You've worked with them for a long time, right? You want to be respectful. Sometimes you just got to push. You got to demand the answers because none of this is making any sense. And then I would love to hear what the backroom conversations were about how you could make this representation to the council. And what went on where someone says, well, I think we can tell them this, or I think maybe we shouldn't tell them that, or I don't know, you know, where we're going to be. But obviously somebody misled this council, excuse me, and I would say it's with intentionality. That's just my opinion. As I look at all of this objectively, many degrees of separation removed, having sat in both of those persons' seat in an organization, a government organization to boot, and having sat on a number of boards, been the head of finance committee, received reports from administration, looked at budget to actual, figured out what our financial strategic plan was going to be, that this is not by accident. This is intentional. I can't see it any other way. The numbers are the numbers. How you evaluate them and what you're willing to reveal as to the frailty of, you know, the protocols inside the accounting office or whatever it may be, that's what this is all about. That's what this has been all about for a long time, going back multiple administrations. So I cannot believe for a moment that they were telling the council anything contrary to what they went in April 17th, 2025, as pointed out by WDSU-TV, these representations being made to the council. Here we are. Allegedly, we're going to have a $100 million surplus. We end up with $160 million, $163 million deficit, to be exact. And now, we're not sure whether or not we're going to make payroll for the last five pay periods of 2025. There's a huge, huge delta here between these representations. And no one, I've watched all the council meetings and budget meetings, no one has provided, in my view, a reasonable explanation as to why we find ourselves in the position that we find ourselves in today, which is tragic. But what it's emblematic of is ineptitude. Quite frankly. And I know there were some council members yesterday that feel bad for who's taking the heat here. I wouldn't feel bad at all. Collectively, the city looks like a band of idiots. And if you're going to remediate this problem moving forward, everybody better step up and take the responsibility for their actions, because you're not going to move forward. They will continue to cover up the deficiencies here. And Joe Threat, as good a guy as he is and as transparent as he's been thus far, thank God, there's not enough of Joe Threat to change this culture. People need to be held to account right now, because moving forward, and a number of council members represented this in their comments, it's got to change now. It's got to be shock and awe. We can't be all nicey. We can't be nice. This isn't about nice. We have put ourselves in a predicament that's going to be very difficult to get out of. How do you move this city forward when you can't get your it together? It's a legitimate question. A legitimate question. There's a whole bunch of stuff that was said in that meeting yesterday that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. knowing a little bit of how this works from, you know, an accounting standpoint as to where we should be putting all of this money, it's crazy. But yesterday there was a representation made that in 2018, this city had $4 billion federal grant portfolio. At that point in time, that means that we would have to spend $4 billion on the front end to be reimbursed on the back end. The city realized that it was in a difficult position from a cash, on a cash basis, that they didn't have the necessary cash flow to be able to front this money and wait for the reimbursement. So they entered into negotiations with FEMA relative to the JIRR program. And they were able to, in 2021, work out a situation where FEMA would advance $90 to $120 million periodically, and the city would dump that into their general fund. Now, I believe there's a problem. I could tell you that if I would have been looking at this, there would have been a special revenue fund set up to account for all of these dollars of JIRR separately. And I'm sure in the ledgers they have a way that they did that. But the fact of the matter is there would have been a strategy as it relates to these advance payments being made as to how we were going to transfer this out on the operational side of actually doing the work out there in the field. There has to be an intrinsic connection, real close nexus between these two activities, revenue, receiving it, and expenditures going out of the door. Because we should have known that we didn't have the cash flow, we didn't have the working capital to support these kinds of dollars, right? JIRR, I think, was about $1.6 billion of that $4 billion total. That's the annual budget of the city. So if you take a percentage of that any given year, you know it's going to be a stressor on your organization. Now, I suspect that those dollars dumped into the general fund helped their cash flow. There's no inside information that I have, but I'm listening very carefully to what they are saying. And what they are saying is that when that payment stopped, all hell broke loose. And that's why we're making this representation that, you know, the shutdown of the federal government has become a problem. It should have only been a problem for JIRR, not for the entire city. Had the financial strategy and protocols been in place to account for same. We got off into a conversation about a FEMA grant being extended to 2028 because it's going to expire in 2025. They have about $300 million worth of projects in progress. These are all sideshows because presently the city's only owed $5 million in reimbursement by the federal government at the present time. This is their words, not mine. When you begin to chart out all of this math, it's not making any sense. It's a deflection. It's a distraction. This is not the core problem. The extension of that grant has its own downstream implications, separate and apart from the predicament that we find ourselves in right now. Right now. So I don't know where this is all going to end up going. But I can tell you that there's going to have to be significant changes as to how we account for this. Now, the last point, because I'm running out of time. How any person who's putting together a budget can put a line item for overtime for the New Orleans Police Department at $45,000 is beyond me. If you're going to put together a budget document that's meaningful, right? This is kind of the guiding light for the city. Is it going to be absolutely exact? No, but it's got to be meaningful, right? $45,000 is a plug number. Plain and simple. Let's call it for what it is. Call them out. It's a plugged number. Because you wanted the budget to reflect something, an outcome. And I'm wondering how many other plug numbers are in there. Because if you look historically, there's no way anybody's going to have me believe that the NOPD spent on average of $45,000 in overtime in any given year. Typically, you look back, you remove the extraordinary events, you take some percentage of the total that you've spent in overtime in evaluating your employment base, how many people are actually working for you at that point in time. You sit down with the head of the NOPD and their financial team, and you try to figure out how much money they're going to need in overtime for that particular year. You certainly don't plug the budget with $45,000, because the day you adopted that budget, the moment you put that number on that piece of paper, that budget was not worth the paper it's written on. It's not a guiding light. It's bullshit. So let's call it for what it is. I just said a bad word, and they just knocked it out. So it's BS. Right? It's absolute BS, that number. Let's call it out for what it is so that it never happens again. Because council members are not in a position to understand and digest the granular details as to what's going on with these financial statements, the budget being a tool to be used in order to effectively manage an organization so that, you know, you do your budget to actual reports, which would be meaningful for the council to have every month, to include sales tax revenues coming in, property tax revenues, and things of that nature. But this whole process has been a charade. And until we call it for what it is, we're never going to get to the point where we want to be the promised land, where we have and creating financial documents that are sacrosanct. They actually have meaning. They actually reflect exactly where we are. That snapshot that Gilbert Montagno talked about, if we spent, and I'll quote again, if we spend every dollar this entire year and everything comes to fruition, we will end the year with a $100 million fund balance. I don't know what didn't come to fruition, because everybody's saying that the $40 million spent in police overtime predominantly in the first two quarters of 2025, that had come to fruition. Are we saying that we spent a whole lot of money in the back half? I don't know. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know that anybody understands completely what anyone's saying. Sounds like a rosy picture, right? We'll be right back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We set aside some time every other week to visit with the Port of New Orleans, and because we understand just how important it is to the economy of this metropolitan region, not just the city of New Orleans. Well, today we are the beneficiary of having a board member who just finished their term on the board, Walt Leger Jr. He was appointed to the Port NOLA Board of Commissioners in July of 2020 by Governor John Bel Edwards, as well as to the Public Belt Railroad, because you serve in both capacities, and he joins us. Walt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, how are you? I'm happy to be with you.
So thank you so much for joining us. So, Walt, 5 years on that board, as you think about your term of office there and your service, what stands out most about, you know, your years there, 5 years, and if you're willing to share that with us?
Absolutely, Newell, and thanks for having me. It's really a pleasure to talk about it because this is one of my favorite topics. I'm an old maritime lawyer. My grandfather was a ship captain during World War II and then later a merchant captain. My dad was also a master mariner and a captain, and I have a son, my second son, not to be confused with Walt III, Rhett, Captain Rhett Leger, is a captain and a pilot, and so is my brother and nephew. So we go way back. So the honor of being asked to serve on the board of the Port of New Orleans was a great one, and I took it very seriously. It was also, I think, a very interesting point in time, and literally during my term, we celebrated the 125-year anniversary of the Port of New Orleans, this is as significant a point in time as any. Because of during that period of time, the decision by the state, the nation, the port, and the region to build one of the largest container facilities in the hemisphere in St. Bernard Parish. And it's been somewhat politically controversial, but an important economic development project. And I'm from St. Bernard Parish, grew up in St. Bernard, went to the public schools of St. Bernard, went up north to college at LSU.
Way north.
Went to came back down south to Tulane Law School to study maritime law, and then moved back to the parish, raised my kids in the parish, and headed most of the Chamber of Commerce, founded the Chamber, founded the Economic Development Foundation, this is an important. You asked what was important in the last 5 years, certainly. The plans to develop this port for not just St. Bernard Parish, but the New Orleans region, the state and the nation will have a significant impact. And we've made significant progress in those 5 years. I was just hoping I would still be on board. My term was 5 years. When we do the actual groundbreaking, we expect that will take place in 2026. That's been an interesting project, an important project, and probably one of the most significant in the history of the Port of New Orleans.
You've always been very politically active, civically active, as you pointed out, the finding of the chamber and stuff. What surprised you most about, once you got into the weeds of the port, what was the biggest surprise to you?
Well, actually, I can tell you this. As a leader, I've been involved in trying to, as you and I go way back.
Yep.
When I chaired the New Orleans Regional Chamber, was very much involved, having come out of St. Bernard, in creating a regional approach to economic development, to everything that we do. The Port of New Orleans has been, since 1896, a regional port. It's not just the Port of New Orleans, but its jurisdiction covers St. Bernard and Jefferson Parish. And in terms of your question regarding what surprised me the most, it was that in the 1980s, when I was involved in the business community in St. Bernard, our complaint was when in 1984, Cosma Aluminum, with 3,500 jobs, shut down, we wanted the Port of New Orleans to exercise its jurisdiction and build a port there. That's been, you know, talked about for years and years and years. And I was a big critic of the Port of New Orleans for not building a port in St. Bernard. But we were able to get, you know, to develop the Port of St. Bernard, the St. Bernard Port, to develop the site of the old Cosner Aluminum facility. And my surprise was that we couldn't get them to do it then. But by the time I got on the board and I was put on a New Orleans seat, I guess I wasn't surprised. I was inspired by the fact that the port, with a totally new approach, a much more regional thought and consideration for the people of St. Bernard and Jefferson, decided to build this world-class container facility to compete with Houston and Mobile in St. Bernard Parish. And so with respect to the port, I guess I'm surprised that they finally listened to us. Yeah. And I'm surprised that there's been some local opposition to this.
As it relates to operations, I mean, I took a tour and you know, have had the opportunity to talk to a lot of folks with the port. I mean, I always knew about the port's importance, right, and what they did.
Right.
But I didn't really fully understand and comprehend the breadth and depth of what they're involved in. I'm wondering if you went through that same process as a board member.
Well, I think I came onto the board with maybe a little bit more knowledge of the way things were done than others, having been a maritime lawyer,
right,
having represented ships' pilots, having seen, you know, my earliest memories as a child is going to the tip of Canal Street on the river with my grandmother and my mother and watching either my father or my grandfather's ships come around Algiers Point to dock right there at the tip of Canal Street. It was referred to as the dock board in those days because that's primarily what it does. It operates the docks. But the whole concept of trade has changed, and those type of docks, you know, as you know, that's now the Riverwalk, and it goes, you know, on down, you know, to the Moonwalk, and otherwise the whole concept of docks have changed. I guess I was a little, because I wasn't that familiar with, interested in how extensive the cruise ship industry has become to the Port of New Orleans. We operate cruise docks right where my grandfather used to dock his merchant ships and what were little, what they call passenger ships back then, which he was a captain of. The function, you're right, Newell, the function of a port, it has become modern like everything else, has changed, has progressed. The concept of container shipping has changed the whole approach to everything done in the world.
Yeah.
And the container ships are so big, that's why we have to build, if we're to compete, we've got to build a container terminal below the Mississippi River Bridge, because the newer, larger ships, what we call the post-Panamax ships, the post-expansion of the Panama Canal ships, cannot get when not fully loaded, or even sometimes fully loaded, can get under the bridge. So while not really a surprise, I was impressed as I came aboard with the expertise and the professionalism and the extent of the staffing of the Port of New Orleans.
Let's pivot real quick to the public belt.
Yes.
You know, if it was me getting appointed, I would bring that breadth and depth of experience that I had with my Lionel train that we pulled out every Christmas. I'm wondering if your experience was the same.
Well, that's interesting. I'm pretty close. I had a Lionel train also. And I really liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But I had no real concept of how it fit in with a port.
Right.
And it is, you know, what makes the acquisition of the port of the New Orleans Public Belt Railroad, which, by the way, I both had the real honor to serve as chairman of the board of the port and chairman of the board of the New Orleans Public Belt Railroad. What is really outstanding is the way that what makes the Port of New Orleans really such a unique port in the United States is its connection to all forms of intermodal transportation, including the public belt railroad, and the ability and the fact that we have six class one railroad lines that come through New Orleans. Nobody else has that, and so we have that capacity both to the east and to the west. And by the way, the Port of New Orleans owns the railroad portion of the UEP Long Bridge. I once rode an Amtrak train. That was the extent of my experience as well as Lionel train. I rode an Amtrak train over that UEP Long Bridge when I was younger. We took our three kids on a trip to San Antonio just to take the trip. And I'll tell you, riding on a train up that high is a real experience. But the Port of New Orleans, in the context of both the rail communication and the rail activities, also is involved in, of course, trucking industry, tractor trade, tractor trailer trucking to the container facility. We also do barge transfers, transfer cargo from barge to ships. We expect, particularly in the new container facility, we'll be doing a significant amount of container on barge transportation. Shipping, from the side of a ship onto a barge, containers, and shipping them on up the Mississippi River. So the rail really is just a tremendous component. But that you're right. I didn't have much expertise in the rail industry, other than when I was a young lawyer at the Phelps Dunbar firm. I guess I did some what's called FELA.
Right.
Representation involving railway workers.
While we have a couple of minutes, I wanted to ask you about what do you hope that your legacy will be, having served as chairman of one of the most unique boards that, as we just described, and any advice that you would give to your successor, Dale Revelle, who actually comes from industry. So he's been intrinsically involved in that industry.
Well, what I would like to think my legacy will be is when Governor Edwards appointed me to New Orleans seat, but in light of my connection to St. Bernard, he charged me with, as you go to this board, we're going to build a world-class shipyard down there. I mean, a shipping terminal down there. I would charge you with making sure the people of St. Bernard and the St. Bernard community is looked after, that the impact of this tremendous facility is positive, and that you observe the negative impacts and fight for them. I would like to think my legacy is that, one, I was impressed with the sensitivity of other board members in terms of having only a positive impact on the people of St. Bernard, and certainly that has been my purpose. We have developed and we will develop a really unique St. Bernard Transportation Corridor, a new road through the marsh to keep the trucks off that come out of the terminal off of the streets of St. Bernard Parish. That will be a good thing for hurricane evacuation otherwise.
Absolutely.
We've designed the terminal in such a way that it will have very little impact. It will be economically sound. It will be almost entirely green and electric.
Right.
This will be a tremendous impact, and I think the development of that port, we're going to have $86,000 average jobs there. It should have a great economic development impact, and I would hope that will be my legacy. That's something I passed on in conversation to Dale, my replacement, but I think the others on the board are all very conscious of making things good.
Got to get to a break. I want to thank you for your service to our community and in a different fashion, and we really appreciate that and appreciate our friendship as well. Walt Leger Jr., former member of the Port of New Orleans and
thank you, Neil.
The Public Belt Railroad, former chairman as well. Have a great week.
Can I mention one quick thing to you?
Yes, sir.
I know it's personal. My son, Walt Leger III, if anybody doesn't like anything I say, don't blame Walt III. But he had his third child yesterday. Beautiful baby girl.
I texted with him, a beautiful baby girl. He sent me a picture. I reached out to him, and I profusely apologized. I did not know that was going on, but congratulations, Grandpa.
Thank you. Number 9 grandchild for me.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
There you go. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Okunard Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Tight school football fans, get ready for week 8 of our Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup. Join Ian Ozan and Coach Lou Valden tomorrow night at 7 for the most comprehensive high school football show in America. WWL will broadcast live from the St. Charles Catholic Belchase game. The other big games include John Curtis at Jesuit, Archbishop Rummel at Holy Cross, Hammond at Covington, Warren Easton at Edna Carr, Salmon at Slidell. Get ready for Friday Night Lights, the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup presented by Acadian Company and Dr. Pepper, tomorrow night from 7 to 10:30, only on WWL. When we come back, we'll visit with Dr. John Colfrey, breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health, and Dr. Ellen Zacharis, radiation oncologist at LCMC Health. We will be talking about breast cancer and some of the newest protocols that are out there. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.